Perek Rishon Mishnah Tesvav. Shammai Omer, Asei Terascha Kva, Emor Ma'at Va'asei Habei, V'Havei Mekabel Es Kol Ha'odom B'Seva Panim Yefos. Shammai said three things, and all of these, as are the other things we're learning in Perek, the Mishnah is here, are goals that we strive for, even if we have a hard time with it, or even if we're not fully there. So this is somewhere where we're getting to, where we're trying to direct ourselves to eventually achieving, even if we're not there yet. These aren't requirements per se, like mitzvahs that you have to do. These are things that you're supposed to try to achieve and attain. So I say teras kava. Your Torah should be kava. Your Torah should be the central focus of your daily routine. And the Rabbeinu Yoina brings from the Avos Rav Nosson that whoever makes his Torah Iker and his Malacha Tefela, then he is made, he personally is going to be an Iker L'Olam Haba. A person whose Torah is Tefela and his Malacha is Iker, so he's Tefela L'Olam Haba. So the Mishnah just says, Asei Torah Kava, make your Torah the dominant focus. And what else would be your focus? Career, your job, you spend a lot of time on it. So it's telling us to focus on your Torah, and the work will also be there, but it'll be tafel, incidental to the Torah. If you do that, then this person in Olam Haba, he'll be an Iker in Olam Haba. But if it's vice versa, if his Torah is the incidental and his Malacha is the Iker, so he will be a Tafel the Olam Haba. So Ben Yonah makes the following observation. What's the loimar? Shemish lo asa averis. We're dealing with someone who did no averis. V'lo asa ha-Torah Iker, but the Torah was not the Iker by him. Afilu im yizkeh liyos began Eden, even if he merits Gan Eden, Tafel yesham, he'll shot Tafel. We're dealing with someone who's in Olam Haba. In both cases, in Olam Haba. The one who made his Torah Iker is an Olam Haba, but the one who made his Malacha Iker is Olam Haba. That means he was very honest in his business dealings. He was impeccable in his dealings with people. He never spoke Lashon Hara. The man was a tzaddik, a total tzaddik. He did everything amazing, someone we would want to emulate in his midos and in hagos, davening, mitzvahs. But he didn't emphasize the learning. The learning was, in his life, was a tafel. So he gets Gan Eden, he gets Olam Haba. But his Olam Haba is a tafel Olam Haba, as opposed to the person who was all the above, but by him his Torah was Iker, by him he's an Iker Olam Haba. Now, the difference between an Iker Olam Haba and a tafel Olam Haba, like Kalavai, we get there. So who cares what condition will be in Iker or tafel? So Mesillas Yesharim explains that it's not true. We will care. Now we look at it like, how have I we get there? What difference does it make to me? But does it make a difference to you now if you're in a large house or a tiny hovel? Does it make a difference to you now if you're driving an old beaten up car or a car that runs nicely and is more comfortable? These things make a difference. So in Olam Haba, it's going to make a difference to you. If you are living in Olam Haba in a way that's like everyone else, that you think you should be on that level, and or just, you know, yeah, there's a shelter that they'll take you in, and there's a mattress there for you, and you could be, yeah, you're there. You're an Olam Haba, but you know, that's your accommodations. It will bother the person. The definition of keva versus tafel is not necessarily measured in hours. I've learned this from Arabayim. You know, simply say that means if you spend more time learning than working, that's your Torah Iker, and Malach Arayim. If you spend more time working than learning, it's vice versa, but it's not really true. Teresa Kava doesn't have to be measured in hours. It's really measured in, as I said before, focus. What is the most important part of my day? What is the part that I can't miss? What is that part that I live for? Kihem chayeinu v'arachimeinu. That is what you live for. This is what's important to you. It may be a couple hours. Maybe half hour in the morning, an hour in the morning, an hour to at night. It may not be time-wise, but those are the most important hours of my day. That's Terasa Iker. That's the Iker. And that's why I think, you know, obviously we say it's talking about men, but I think it can apply to women too, as far as what's important, what is your priority, how do you prioritize things in your life. If Torah is a keva, if Torah is a priority, so things change in the dynamics of a household, as opposed to Torah being aroi. Things that are tough fellow aroi, so we'll get it. If we get a chance, we'll do it. If we don't, it's nice. It's a nice thing. No one argues about that. But if we don't have time for it, so we'll just have to bypass it. And we'll catch up later. That's tefel. That's aray. Something which is kavah, you can't miss. Something which is kavah, you got to do. And you got to find time for it, and so on. I think it's really a mindset more than anything else. So the person whose Torah is kavah, so his olam haba, he'll be an ikur in olam haba as well. There's a well-known Dvar Torah, and at the Siyam HaShas of Daf Yomi this past summer, the Rosh Hashiva from the Ger Yeshiva Sfasem said an amazing spin on this well-known Dvar Torah. The well-known Dvar Torah is the story of Rabbi Akiva, who had not been educated in yeshivas when he got married, and his wife said, go to yeshiva, and he went off for 12 years to yeshiva. And at the end of the 12 years, he was a giant of Torah, and he had thousands of Talmidim, and he was on his way home. And when he was approaching his house, he overheard a conversation between his wife and another person. That's so terrible, your husband left you, and this, 12 years, such a long time. And she said, if he listened to me, he'd go back for another 12 years. So he turned around and went back for another 12 years. And after 24 years, he was the Rabbi Akiva that we all know of. So the well-known question is, he's a block or a few steps from his house, he doesn't stop in and say, hello, shalom aleichem, how are you? He was away for 12 years, where's the Derech Eretz? Don't you come in and spend a little time with your wife before you go back to yeshiva? Why did he just turn around on the spot for another 12 years? And the answer we learn is that 12 and 12 is not 24. 12 years with a break and another 12 years is not the same as 24 years straight. So he learned 24 years straight. He had 24 years straight without interruption. It's not the same as 12 and 12. It's a well-known Musar thought. So the Rosh Yeshiva of the Ger Yeshiva said that there are many fine balabatim who work every day and they make sure to learn in the morning before they go to work and they come home and they'll learn at night. But generally speaking, there'll be a break in the day between the time they learn in the morning to the time of the night. It could be a 12-hour break where they're busy with work and other things, commuting, till they get back to a sefer. So he said his suggestion is that every day around lunchtime, they should take some time and learn. Open a sefer. Because 6 and 6 is not 12. 6 hours of work before you learn and 6 hours of work afterwards is not 12 hours working straight. If you say it for the Kedusha that way, so they say it for working too. That's an idea of showing Torah Sekava. My Torah Sekava, I'll break up my work day and spend a little time, a half hour, 20 minutes learning on a lunch break to break up my day. It's not the same as someone who sits at work all day for 12 hours without learning straight. The second thing Shammai said, Emor ma'at aseh habe, a person should say little and do a lot. And we all know, we learned this from Avraham Avinu, that when he had his three guests, he said, I'll give you a little bread, a little water. And in fact, he prepared a whole meal with meat and milk or cream, butter, all the things that he brought for them. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes that this is a derech musar and chasidus, we learned from Avraham Avinu. It's a high madrega, mida al yainis. It's really learned from the Ribbono Shel Olam that the Ribbono Shel Olam said to Avraham Avinu, Gamas Agoya Shevoda Don Anochi, Don is 2 letters, and Hashem redeemed them in 27 letters, or Anis Elakim, Lavolokach Zagoymik, Avgoy, and so on. So the Ribbono Shel Olam also said little and did a lot. Avraham Avinu said a little, did a lot. There's such a mida of understating what your intention and so on. The Mishnah coming up in Mishnah Yud Zayin says that Shimon the son of Gamliel said, "Kol yomai gadalti b'nei chachamim, I grew up all my life among chachamim. V'lo matzasi laguf tov mishtika, and of all the things that I observed, there's nothing better than silence. Veloha medrash ikir elahamasa. And the drashas and the teachings are not as significant as the actions. Vechal hamabed devarim, and one who will speak a lot, maybe chet, will bring about chet. So you get this idea from the Mishnayos here that emor ma'at va'aseh harbeh is all part of this bigger picture. We don't put a premium on speech. Say a little, do plenty, do a lot, but you don't have to talk about it. You don't have to talk a lot. The medrash isn't ikar, it's the maisa. Talk about it isn't what's important, because what you do is what counts. And there's nothing better than shtika. And kol ma'arav devarim, clearly emphasizing we have a power of speech, the more discriminate we are with how we use it, the better off we'll be. Now, clearly, we're supposed to daven, and we're supposed to interact with people in a positive fashion, and there's a Lashon Tov as opposed to Lashon Hara. There are all kinds of ways we're supposed to use our speech, but the less we say, usually, better. It's usually better, less is better than more when it comes to speech.
I just actually read a letter to the editor in a publication, and she was basically saying that academia values high vocabularies and lots of words, and that's sort of an antithesis to Torah. Because of this, she brought this as a proof. It's hard for me to see that, because I think there is value in being able to express yourself clearly with words that pinpoint exactly what you're trying to say. I think having high vocabulary is a good thing.
Speak with precision is a very valuable thing. There's no one knocking speaking with precision. The English language is troublesome, or I should really say cumbersome, because you need to say so many words to get your thought across. In yeshiva, it was always easier to hear a dissertation in Yiddish than in English, because you get your point across with fewer words. Those who preferred English would say you could be more precise in English than in Yiddish. But the fact of the matter is, the sentences are so much more contracted. The same is true in Lashon HaKodesh. When I put notes on the board, if you were in my class, you know I put it in Lashon HaKodesh or Ivrit, close to Ivrit, because it's concise. If I would start to write in English, Hichle Shabbos, it's going to be huge. That's if you're going to write correctly with full sentences and so on. The English language has a lot of words. The dictionaries are much bigger, English language dictionary, than Ivrit, and certainly than Yiddish. It's a more concise. Now, the nuance of how you use a word will change a lot. Even in Lashon HaKodesh, you know there are no synonyms, so that's a different point of understanding what the nuance in each similar word. But there is a value, and I've heard the argument, of giving a shir, a halachic dissertation in English, if you're going to be precise and understand exactly with precision. I think a lot of people don't appreciate the precision with which people speak if they're giving a halachic dissertation. I'm not talking about, in a Musa Shmuz, maybe yes, maybe no. But in halacha, it is so precise that many times people don't get it. I'll give an example when I didn't get it as a young person and I began to understand the language of halacha in English. Rabbi Heinemann Schlitter would put out a publication before Pesach. Now it's a whole big book, but in those days it was a little pamphlet of products for Pesach use and not. And I went and said, Rabbi, is Crest kosher Pesach, because on your list you only had Colgate? He said, I didn't say Colgate's kosher Pesach. Now, I know Colgate was on the pamphlet. I said, I thought I saw Colgate in the pamphlet. It's kosher Pesach. I said, no, it does not say Colgate's kosher Pesach. I never said Colgate's kosher Pesach. So he, after it's enjoyed my discomfort long enough, he said to me, if you look at what it says in the pamphlet, it says Colgate does not contain chametz. It is not kosher Pesach. It's not kosher all year round. It's not kosher. All it says is it does not contain chametz. So, does Crest contain chametz? The point is, there's a precision. He's not going to say Kog is kosher Pesach. It's not kosher. I say Kog doesn't contain chametz. Will everyone who hears that chap understand what he's trying to say when you say it like that? And people sometimes get it, sometimes they don't. And we try to be precise as in English, but people have to realize you're being precise. They're not realizing you're being precise. They're going to make errors. They'll think you said something you didn't say because you were very exact in the words you used and it did not lend itself to be re-said a little differently, like this example I just gave you. So, you know, as far as the idea of giving a lecture or expressing yourself for something significant using the proper words, the level of vocabulary to me is neither here nor there. I think some people use large words for arrogant reasons, not for precision reasons. Other people are just trying to get the point across that this is really the word that sums it up. And they just don't get that no one else knows what they're talking about. If someone realizes the talent and noise, it doesn't understand their language, they should know. Sometimes there are words that I think people should know, and I'll use them, and I'll say, what's that? And I'll say, well, this is high school, you should know what these words mean. So, you know, along the way, you'll end up picking up some English language too. But I just think a lot of academics will use language that is beyond anyone because they feel they have to sound like no one knows what they're talking about. So that's not a question, again, it's not a question of emma'at or kalamabit devarm. To me, it's just that's gaiva. But if it's meant, you know, there's no gaiva intended, it's meant for an educated readership and they appreciate it and they understand it and you convey a point, I don't have a problem with that. A well-written article is a lot more pleasurable to read than a poorly written article on any topic. And certainly if you're reading a Musar or Hashkafa or whatever, you know, it creates perhaps an obstacle for those who want to print. I spoke to a Rebbe years ago about certain printing Chidushei Torah. He says, but will it be written nicely? How is it going to be written? Will it be written in a way that's pleasing and hinder mitzvah, so to speak, in the choice of words, how you write? If it's not, then don't print it, which for some people, it's not their kayach. They don't have that ability. It's really, I would say it's a gift, but it's not a gift. You can learn it. You can learn how to be a good writer. And those who have the talent are wonderful. I don't know if you've ever read any of the books from Rabbi David Foreman. He came this past year. I remember him in yeshiva as a bachur. His writing was gorgeous. His writing was just a pleasure to read. He would do a poem shtick, and he'd write up. He's a journalist major, and a major in journalism, and his writing was a pleasure to read. There's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. At the time, he was working, maybe right after he got married, he was working on the art scroll, Maseches Kedushin, and an art scroll, they now finished the Shas already, but at the time, they'd have Tamid Chachamim translating chapters of the Masechta, and then they'd have other people edit what they wrote to make sure it's written properly. David Foreman, I believe, was the only art scroll writer-editor. He edited his own stuff. It could be someone else proofread it, but he did not require an editor for his stuff. He did the whole Maseches Kedushin. Maseches Kedushin is David Foreman's work. He used to sit in the back of the Ezra's Nashim with his big computer. Those days, computers are large. And he would spend his whole second Seder writing Maseches Kedushin. It was a beautiful work. But some people have a kayach. You have a kayach, or again, you learn, or perhaps it's a combination of a talent, and then you study and perfect it. So it's a pleasure to read. And the same is true, or maybe even Allah with Lashon HaKodesh, or Ivrit, if you're going to write a Sefer. And, you know, if you're discussing halachic topics, perhaps you get away with Lashon HaKodesh, but if it's a Musar type of thing, the language is very important. And some books are beyond our ability to read either, unless you're Israeli. Because for an American who knows Ivrit pretty good, it becomes too high vocabulary. Now, again, for their audience, it's fine. But I don't have any problems with that. I think the main message here of the Mishnah isn't that you should be incapable of expressing yourself, but rather you should realize that words are cheap. It's what you do that counts. And some people just talk too much. It's just too much. That's where you get emma'at, say harbei, lo matzas v'guf tov mishtika. Very rarely does someone say, oh, I got into such trouble because I didn't say. How many times have you heard someone say, oh, did I put my foot in my mouth? People say the wrong thing all the time. I've never heard someone complain that they didn't say. Now, sometimes you could be guilty of not saying. Sometimes you should speak up about something. That could happen too. The Gemara gives examples of people who didn't make a protest for Kafarat Torah. That was an einish that came to them later on. There are times you should speak up, and if you don't, you could feel bad about it later. But most of the time, people have regrets over things they said that they should not have said, and not vice versa. So, you know, when you reflect, lo matzasi l'guf tov mishtika, I think is something that almost everyone could appreciate. You're better off, you most of the time, not saying than saying. Do you have a question?
Yeah, if you see something to somebody and it's not, you know, they're hurt by it, and then no matter how much you ask them for forgiveness or not, it's, if you said it, it's, you know, it's still, so when you do tshuva, so that's probably doing tshuva is, you know, asking them for forgiveness, so they'll forgive you, but it's not 100% forgiven because, you know, you said it to them, but with Hashem, though, is it completely forgiven, though, by Hashem?
As if someone said something that hurts someone else, and you don't feel that they have given you a complete forgiveness for what you said, does it help the Adam L'Makom? So we know the rule is that you have no Mechila ben Adam L'Makom until you have ben Adam L'Chaver. On those sins that we do between each other, we first need mechila from our friend, and then we could approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the person says, I'm moichel you, you're done. At that point, you have mechila. Even if in their heart they may feel bad, what they said counts, not what's in their heart. It's a famous halachic ruling, dvaram shebelev einam dvaram. We don't look at what's in your heart, we look at what you said. So if he said, I'm moichel you, that's mechila. Then you could approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and clap an alchet. But until they said they're moichel you, that's when you have to worry about it. And if they're not moichel you, and they never said I'm moichel you, it's an issue. I just recently came across, I think I read it, I don't think I heard it, where this fellow, I'm pretty sure I read it in a sefer, that a fellow came to someone else with a shaylut, with a torov, one to someone, one to the other. So at the conclusion of the psak, the rov said, you have to pay. So, okay, I pay. Now he says to the other one, be moichel him. As he made him, he listened to both cases. He found one guilty of, I don't know, he damaged someone, he hurt someone. And there was a financial payment to be made. So fine, the psak was, you have to pay. Then he turned to the other one and says, be moichel. He said, okay, it was nothing. Said, no, be moichel. So he said, it's okay, I have no problems. We're good. So I says, say, you're moichel him. And until he said the words, I'm moichel you, he wouldn't let him go. So he said, like, well, what's the problem? I said, it's okay. I said, it's fine. I said, we're good. He said, I'll tell you why I insist that you say, I'm moichel you. Chazal teach us that the whole episode of the 10 Haruge Malchus is the product of Mechiras Yosef. Because of the Chet, Mechiras Yosef, later on, in Gilgulim, these 10 Tzaddikim had to be killed. When you get to Parshas Vayechi, and Yaakov Avinu dies, and the brothers come to Yosef, our father said, they should be Moichlas, and he said, what's the problem? What's the problem? There's no issues, I have no problems, no ties on you. And even when he first revealed himself to them, he said, Hashem sent me here, you didn't do anything, the Ibn Hashem put me here, there's a reason why I came down here. Clearly he expressed himself over and over, both in Vayigash and in Vayichi, no problem, we're good, it's cool, it's fine, no problem, I understand the Hashgacha, the Ibn Hashem wanted me here, everything is good. He never said, I'm moichel you. You never find in Chumash, he said those words, Machalach. And the Rav said, that's why there's Hasar of Gemalchus. Because despite everything he said, that I understand the Hashkach, and I have no tainas on you, and in my heart is good, better than in the case you mentioned. My heart's good. I'm fine. I accept Hashem sent me here. You didn't send me here. The Ribbono Shel Olam sent me here. Asari hu gamalchus. If he would have said, I'm moichayu, says the Rav, it wouldn't have happened. I forgot who the Rav was. It wouldn't have happened. So he insists that you say the words, I'm moichayu. And therefore, that's something you have to keep in mind. When we come to ask mechila, it's fine, don't worry about it. That's not good enough. They should say, I'm moichayu. And once they say, I'm moichayu, it's good, that's good enough, even if they still don't feel so good about it. Between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's done. The chet's gone.
That's like if you're dealing with somebody who has the same perspective. Let's say you're dealing with someone who's like not prone or something, and they're just going to hold a grudge. And it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to be upset. Like, everything you're doing is right, but you can't change how they're going to act.
But did you do something wrong that he asked Mechila for, or you did nothing wrong?
No, let's say you insulted them.
So you did something wrong. You didn't do everything right. You did something wrong.
After you said, I'm sorry, and they're not going to...
They don't forgive you? No. That's sad. They should forgive you. It's terrible.
Also, you didn't even do anything wrong, though, but they're just upset.
But then they don't have to ask mechila.
You don't have to?
If you didn't do anything wrong?
If you didn't, but they think...
Let's say they're angry that I exist. What am I supposed to do? What am I going to do?
So if you didn't really do anything wrong to somebody, they just think that you did, then it's not your problem?
Why is it your problem?
Really
unless you really did do something. See, if you really did something but just don't admit it to yourself, that's one thing. But let's say you're totally innocent and they're just jealous of you and therefore they're upset at you and therefore they're angry at you and you got the position or whatever that they wanted, so now they have tainas on you. What do I do?
Well, people can be more sensitive than you and they could think you did something wrong.
If you did nothing wrong, you did nothing wrong. Now, is it nice to have people angry at you? No, you should try to, you know. There is a concept of not causing tsar to other people, even if you are totally innocent. So we can work on that. There is such a concept. This is also the same discussion of tsar gamalchus. Why are there 10? It should only be 9. We're going to be dumb and we're not involved. One of the 10 is for Yosef. I say Rabbi Kiva was connected to Yosef. What did Yosef do? He was the one who was sold. Doesn't help. So you could say he caused it, caused the things he did. Or you could say the fact that even though he was an innocent victim, right, that's, you could argue innocent or not, but even if he was an innocent victim, through him it happened. That's the same thing why David was punished for the death of the Kahanim and Nev. What did David do? Da'ek Edom, he spoke Lashon Hara to Shaul HaMelech, and the Kahanim and Nev were killed. Why is David going to be punished later on for this? It came through him. It came through him. So even if you are really innocent, but because of you or through you, someone else suffered, you do have to ask Mechila for that. You have to figure out how you're going to do that, in the case you described, but yeah.
This year I was in B'nai B'nai, and I heard a story that happened like right before then, that basically, I don't remember all the details, but somebody, maybe through a dream or something, found out that he had to mechil somebody else, where the other person would be punished, and they were like really, the other person was very sick, and if they would die before he came and said he was mechil them, then it would be on him because he didn't grant the mechila. Because he caused somebody else to be punished since he wasn't mechil. Okay?
I'm a little confused in the story, okay. But I hear the story. Why is the person sick? What did he do? Nothing?
He did something wrong.
The sick person did something wrong.
But the one who he did it wrong to
wasn't mechil.
He forgot about it.
So if he'd been loyal, then the sick person would get better.
Right. And he didn't want the other person to die because then he would have an attack.
Right.
Why couldn't he just say the Ribbono Shel Olam before Shema? The whole story of finding him and getting
he
to him.
Probably
and
did. He probably did. He didn't mean it. He wasn't thinking about that person.
He doesn't think about that person. Person. Who's your fault if someone else gets punished because they did something wrong?
Yeah, they have to approach you.
But if you forgot about it? If you forgot about it,
the Gemara says, Loitzoiv, Lotzadik, it is not good for a tzadik when someone is punished because of him. That means some Amma Oret spoke bad about a tzadik, and now this Amma Oret gets punished. It's bad for the tzadik. It counts against the tzadik's cheshbon that this Am Haaretz suffered because of him, to the point that even a lashon the Gemara, he won't get in the chitz of Kadosh Baruch Hu and Shemayim. It's serious business causing someone else suffering, even though they brought it on themselves.
So what's the
tzaddik supposed to do? Tzaddik supposed to daven, Ribono Shel, nothing bad should happen to this Am Haaretz because of me.
How this not happened?
The guy publicly screamed at him, embarrassed him in public.
He's
supposed to say, Ribono Shel, nothing should happen because of me.
So why does it help? Let's say it's not public. Let's say somebody spoke Lashon Hara.
If he is unaware of it, then he can't. He's not. If he's unaware, he's unaware. But if he's aware of it, then, yeah.
But what if someone's mad at you? They someone's unforgiving you. Someone does not forgive you.
Right.
And you have no clue, and you don't tell anybody, and you don't tell anybody.
The Rambam says someone who's upset at someone and doesn't let them know is a Rasha.
But
and who's the example? Shmuel Beis. Someone was mad at someone and didn't tell anybody for 2 years. Which perek? It's probably perek Yud Beis or Yud Gimel, somewhere around there. Avshalom was angry at Amnon and didn't say a word. He bided his time, and then he got him. The Rambam says, if you're upset at someone, you have to tell them. How can they ask mechila if they don't know?
So if they don't tell you, you
can't. Right? It's wrong to be upset. You can't do anything, you don't know. You don't know. You know, you're down in the some people are angry, you should be me, but you have no clue. But someone who is angry at someone else should let them know, so they can ask mechila, they can make amends. To keep it a secret from them, so then how they're ever going to miss machina. Yeah.
Someone asks you forgiveness for something they did. Do you have to verbalize? Do you have to verbally say to them, "I'm moichel you,"
or
can you just say, "It's okay, it's fine"?
So what we're saying that whole story is, you should say, "I'm moichel you," or "I forgive you."
What if you just if you didn't say either one of those? Can you just say it like to yourself, "I forgive that person"? Does that count? Because it would be weird.
That's
to
what you're saying to Benishon. That's what she's asking. All right, that's what you're saying to Benishon.
Because they know, you basically told them that you forgive them.
Right. If you verbalize, this story was the person would, like Yosef never set up mechila. If a person did it, even not in their presence, I imagine it should work.
Why is there a difference? And why do you say it?
They didn't do anything.
Isn't that an interesting thing?
They didn't do anything.
Who didn't do anything? By the brothers and Yosef?
No, if you say to someone, it's not a big deal. You didn't do anything.
Because they did something. So your way of saying, forget about it, it's okay. Mm-hmm.
See, human nature, people would rather just not tell them, oh, by the way, I'm upset at you. They'd rather just, you know, wait till it passes, or, you know, they'd rather not, every time someone's upset.
When you have a very close relationship with somebody, and you're upset at something they said, you don't tell them, you know, the thing you said was really upsetting. Or you just keep it to yourself and let it smolder.
Most people keep it themselves.
Is that healthy?
It's not. But
is that for good? Is that good for relationships?
No.
No.
Really
no. You really should. You should tell them. That really wasn't nice of you. That wasn't nice what you said. I didn't realize. And half the time, they never realized what they said was insulting or not nice. And they never would have known if you would have just got it out. And afterwards, everyone feels much better. So, listen, you know, like no pain, no gain. You know, keep it to yourself. There'll be a different kind of discomfort that just lingers. Yeah.
Are there any stories, like, there's stories in Tanakh where somebody did something wrong to someone else. Is there any other story when someone asked forgiveness from someone else and the other person said, I forgive you? Like, how do you know that you have to do?
Yeah, people ask in the Ibn Ishlam all the time. Chatasi, Shalom HaMelech.
Right, they said, like,
Ben Adam Lachavero, Ben Adam Lachavero in Tanakh, where they asked Mechila.
Even like, let's say someone spoke Lashon Hara about someone else, you never see.
Not usually.
No, I'm saying, you never see, like, if there's a story, like, you never see that they ask that for forgiveness.
Miriam doesn't ask
forgiveness. Yeah, Miriam doesn't ask, like.
The Torah wrote what the Torah wrote. Did I write? I don't know. So you want to say, therefore, the Yosef got the Yidris Mechila? As the fact that it doesn't mention it isn't a proof because it never mentioned it by anyone.
Right, because it doesn't mention for anybody.
That's a good, good point. It's a good ha'ara. I don't have an answer to that. But anyways, that's what this world was mocked, but people should say, I'm Mechila. Say, no, I forgive you.
Why do people say this Rosh Hashanah?
Better than, well, if you say it sincerely, I'm sure it's good.
But if you also say you don't know, there's no way you can have kavanah about something that's from a different dobo.
Well, you hope it takes effect properly, how it works.
About tshuva, if someone does chit, and does it, and then you do all the steps of tshuva, does it go back to how you were before you did the
chet? Well, if a person has a complete tshuva on a chet, so zdanius kizachius or kishkagus depending tshuva yeh tshuva avo, makom shbal tshuva oimdim even higher than say. So to many degrees, you're higher than you were before. You're not the same as you were before, but you're actually better off than you were before. The last thing that's mentioned here in this Mishnah is be mekabel kol adam b'seiv panim yafas. Always greet people with a smile. The Rabbi Yonah says people should see you with panim shel simcha, and by doing that, ruach habrius necha hemena, people will enjoy your company. And the Rabbi Yonah goes on to say there's a message here, and the message is to stay away from kas. Stay away from anger. It's a very bad midah. Rather, you should have the midas haratzon. The people should be merutzim imenu. So basically, you want to be easygoing, you want to be happy, and you want to deal with people like that. People should see you as a person who's upbeat and positive, and people will want to associate with you, and people look forward to hearing you in the morning and to seeing you. There are some people that you cross the street to make sure you're not on the same side of the street as they are, and other people you cross the street to be on the same side of the street. Right? Some people you want to meet up with. It just make you feel good when you see them and spend a minute with them. Other people are not that way. So, Mekabel Kol Adam B'Seiv Panim Yafos is trying to instruct us to have a demeanor that is pleasant and happy, and one that people will be comfortable with you. When I think of certain great people, every photograph I've seen of them is very severe. They're not smiling. And I think this is true of many intense individuals. Their mind is always wherever it is, beyond where we are, and you don't see a smile. There are others that we always see smiley. I think specifically of, you know, the pictures in the Bar Levine, or even if he's not smiling, he looks like he's smiling. Even if he's not smiling. And I contrast that with the photograph I have in my house of the Stipler, who was severe. I don't have any other word for it. He was severe. He was a very holy man and steeped in Torah and Mussar. But it was scary. It was scary going to see him. It was not fun. It was, I mean, you wait online to get to see him, but it was scary. There was a certain awe/dread, you know, to go into such a person. It wasn't like I had the shaychus to go to Bar Levine, but I don't think people probably had that kind of discomfort or sense of dread before seeing him. So on the one hand, in Mekabel Kol Adam B'Seiv Panim Yafos, there is such a concept that you're supposed to be pleasant in your interactions with people. But I don't know if that's takes away from some great people who were just, I don't know, beyond this world. So, have you ever seen a picture of Aaron Cutler smiling? I've seen many photos of Aaron. I don't think he's ever smiling. There's a picture, famous picture of him and Ramesha dancing at a wedding. their faces. You would never guess they're at a wedding from the expressions on their faces. They're dancing at a wedding, like holding hands, and their minds are like Tysus and Gittin. You know, like this is totally not in there and wherever they were. It doesn't mean Rav Moshe did smile. There were pictures of, you know, pictures of him smiling. And imagine Rav Aaron must have smiled too. I've never seen a photograph of it. And I even saw the Stipe smile once on one occasion. But most part it was really severe. This is what I'm grappling with. How do you explain? Kyle was in the office. He wasn't bekas. He wasn't angry. He wasn't upset. He just was elsewhere, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Is it because with most people, if you walk by like a normal person, they don't smile at you, like they're probably upset at you. Like there's a reason. But these like great people, you know that they're not unhappy to see you. So they don't need to like greet you with a big giant smile. They know.
But that happens all the time. Like the same thing of insulting someone without realizing it. Someone comes to me and says, I heard you're not, my grandfather says you're not talking to him. I says, what? You passed him in one stop and you didn't say it? I passed him one stop. Like I was oblivious to the fact that this person may have been there and was slighted because I didn't go over. I had no idea he was even there in the first place. I had no intention to cause him any, but like, I got the message. The next time I saw him, I went over them and made sure. Kim Sholem, and how are you? I'm sorry, I didn't notice you. It was my fault. I was, you know, everyone, I think, but okay.
The rabbi's like having people come to him. Like, obviously, he's more than happy to help them. So they're probably, like, he's the reason his door is open and he has a line of people seeing him. I'm sure you don't think if you pass somebody on the street, he would say, like, good job. So, like,
I don't know if he'd notice the person. Right. You first have to notice them to be able to say good job. The other thing is, when I once was walking with Rav Weinberger Goldstein, the Rashiv on Shabbos, every person he passed, man or woman, he made sure to say good Shabbos. Made no difference who it was. He did not differentiate the male or female. There's no gender gap by him. Good Shabbos, a smile. Rav Weinberger Goldstein. Everyone he saw, the big good Shabbos, smile. So to a certain, maybe you have to work on seeing the people around you. And for years I didn't wear glasses on Shabbos. And someone told me, someone waves to you, you don't see it. They get insulted. You have to wear glasses. So they're right. I start wearing glasses on Shabbos so I could see someone across the street.
Why not?
There's a discussion in halacha, but it's okay. Everyone wears glasses, but I wasn't wearing it. In any event, but I wouldn't notice talk. I wouldn't notice someone across the street without my glasses. So how can you do that? They get insulted. They don't, you know, so I said, you're right. So I start wearing glasses on Shabbos. I think to a certain degree, a person has to be aware of that. But I think you're also right. When people went in line to see the Stipler, most of them had serious issues. It usually was a serious encounter. They weren't coming to schmooze or trade jokes. So perhaps that was also part of the... but he was always learning. He was always thinking and learning. It was just... Even when you talk to him, it's almost like he could be in two places at the same time. I don't know. I mean, he addressed you, he took care of you, he did whatever you... But to certain, you almost felt like he's not here. He's in a different world. The Stipler was very holy. And this thing, it was different. It was a different kind of experience being in the presence of someone like that. So I don't... The average person who went to see him was not upset. They were very pleased to have gone to see him. Someone who was not initiated, I know some people who were like becoming from who are very... insulted. Like they felt disrespected by the encounter. They didn't appreciate what they, later on they came to appreciate it, but at the time they're like, so you have to know, who do you bring into such a person? You know, you have to be prepared.
Well, he does something like that. Is it his fault that he insulted people by accident?
You come to his house, he's there, he gives you a bracha, whatever. So they're insulted that he didn't, I don't know what he didn't do for them. But I don't think it's a problem.